puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Look, I'm excited for every episode of Abandoned Manitoba, but more excited today because there's a connection with Downton Abbey. Gordon Goldsborough, tell me more. Are you a fan?
Yeah. I was a big fan. I loved the show. And yes, we're going to talk about a small brick building that overlooks the Assiniboine River here in Winnipeg. And yeah, it was used for a purpose that I think fans of Downton Abbey will recognize.
All right, so what's the connection? Where do we start?
We should start with a very brief recap of Downton Abbey, what it was, you know, for listeners who might not be aware. It was a television series set in the early 20th century at the country estate of the wealthy Crawley family. I think the reason that was so interesting was that, you know, it had engaging stories, but also I think it depicted a lifestyle that is mostly gone today. You know, it dealt with the pampered lives of the Crawleys, and it was made possible by a large staff of domestic servants, cooks, maids, butlers, you know, the whole deal that we don't typically see much anymore.
Yeah, I love that upstairs, downstairs feel. But I guess this whole episode is not deconstructing, you know, Edith and Lady Mary. How does this relate to today's topic?
Well, of course, most well-to-do homes in that time period, not just the wealthy country estates of the nobility, would have had at least one coachman. And his job, and it was his, because in the vast majority of cases, I think it was performed by men, his job was to drive his employer from place to place. And in the early days, of course, that would have been in a horse-drawn carriage or coach, and hence the name coachman, later in an automobile. These men, of course, also, in addition to driving, would also have to tend the horses and feed them, clean up after them. And usually this would be done in a stable on the grounds of the house. And interestingly enough, the coachman would live typically with the horses. So there'd be a fairly elaborate building on the grounds that we would call a coach house, or sometimes people would call it a carriage house because it would be sometimes with horse carriages.
So not like a stable. He had his own fairly, like you said, elaborate home.
Well, a stable, but with living space in it for people, too.
So were there coach houses in Winnipeg?
Oh, indeed, there are coach houses in Winnipeg. They can still be found in older parts of the city where in earlier days, the wealthy and powerful people would have lived. So I'm thinking of places like Wellington Crescent, a few places in Fort Rouge. Over the past several months, my wife and I have been walking in various neighborhoods around Winnipeg. And the idea is, of course, to get some exercise, but also to enjoy the architectural diversity of the city. And in the course of our walks, we have found dozens of coach houses while walking down back alleys, because that's typically where you have to walk to see them.
And how do you recognize them? Do they have kind of any distinctive features?
Well, in our minds, a coach house should hearken back to the days when there was a coachman or a chauffeur living in it. So the most distinctive feature that we found was that they are usually two stories. The main floor for the horse or for the car, and the second floor with an apartment for the coachman. And I thought we'd talk about three of the coach houses that we found to give listeners sort of an idea of what they look like. And I'll just maybe add a few interesting details about each one of them.
All right. Which one should we start with?
Well, let's start with the oldest of the coach houses we've found so far. And in fact, this one belongs to a friend of mine. The city of Winnipeg claims that her coach house and the associating house that my friend lives in date to 1909. But we think, based upon the architectural details of the buildings, that they're actually older, you know, probably from the 1890s, if not earlier. The coach house itself is a wooden two-story structure. On the ground level, it has doors on two sides. So I think the idea was that you could drive the horse and carriage in from one side and then leave from the other side, just go right through the building. And inside, there's also some what are now quite rickety stairs that ascended to the second floor. And there was a very modest apartment for the coachman. By the sound of my friend's description, it wouldn't be the sort of place that you'd want to live in for long, especially not in the wintertime, because although there was evidence of having once been a wood stove in the coach house, I can't imagine it would have thrown much heat, so it wouldn't have been a very comfortable place for the coachman in the winter.
What condition is it in?
Well, my friend has done extensive renovation and restoration, and it's put the coach house on a concrete foundation. She replaced some of the rotten carriage doors that were facing the street. She's installed new windows in the apartment. It actually looks wonderful now. And in fact, in the early days of the pandemic, my friend's son lived there just for a while. But again, I don't think he's living there now, given the cold weather we have.
So that was the first one, the oldest one that you know of. What's the second coach house?
Well, the second one, I think, has an interesting connection to Downton Abbey, which, as I said, was the home for the Crawleys. Our second coach house belonged to the Rowleys. See the connection there?
I do.
The house and its coach house were built of bricks in 1919 for banker Charles Walsh Rowley, the manager of the Canadian Bank of Commerce. In those days, bankers were pretty prominent people, and obviously he had a bit of money because he built just a spectacular home and a pretty darn nice coach house. It's much more elaborate than my friend's building. Well, for example, it had steam heat provided by the boiler in the main house, and therefore it would have been quite comfortable in the winter. In fact, the coach house, unlike my friend's, is still being used. It's still being lived in today. When we walked by not long ago, we saw that there was lights on, there was a window open, you know, people were still living there. The apartment on the second floor is accessible from interior stairs from the outside, and it's really quite nicely appointed. It has a living room, a bathroom, a bedroom, a small kitchen, and in fact, in the course of doing research for this episode, I actually spoke briefly to one of its former occupants. Just this morning, he sent me a sketch showing the layout of the apartment in the coach house, and it really looks quite comfortable. In fact, he said, yeah, he really quite enjoyed living above the garage in the old former coach house.
Now, your clue talked about a building overlooking the Assiniboine River. What is that story?
The reason that I really was interested in this third one was because it's quite unusual, quite unlike the other ones we found in our search. Unlike the other ones in which the coachman lived above the place where the horses were, this coach house has the apartment below them. And my first thought was, wow, that wouldn't be a very good place to be, because of course all of the leaks, the smells would, you know, naturally descend from the horses down into the apartment. It probably wouldn't be very pleasant. But it turns out the coach house and, in fact, the house to which it is connected were built in 1913, you know, quite late. So it's probable that it actually never housed horses, only automobiles. Now, it's not used today, and this is where the abandonment comes into our story. I'm told the building is now used for, well, let's just say the euphemism is storage.
We all know what that means. Do we know anything about the first owner of this coach house?
Oh, indeed we do. It's quite a prominent fellow, in fact. It belonged to the Reverend Charles Gordon. He was the pastor of St. Stephen's Presbyterian Church on Portage Avenue. It's known today as Elam Chapel. And of course, Nadja, you probably see it a lot. It's right across the street from the CBC studio.
Oh, okay.
Now, you might wonder how a church minister, who, you know, typically they aren't wealthy people, how could he afford a large house? And this is, in fact, a quite large house in a very tony neighborhood of Armstrong's Point. You know, how could a minister afford that? Well, it turns out that Reverend Gordon moonlighted as a novelist, and he wrote under the pen name of Ralph Connor. So, in fact, the house itself is known as Ralph Connor House, and it's a beautiful house. It's actually still in active use, the house itself, as the headquarters of the University Women's Club of Winnipeg. I've been in it quite a few times, and it is absolutely gorgeous inside. Really sumptuous interiors with lots of nice old wooden millwork. You know, actually, to my eye, it looks like entirely the sort of place that the Crawleys would have appreciated if they'd ever left Downton Abbey.
I was just going to say the same thing. Whenever I step into the University Women's Club of Winnipeg, there is that decadent feeling. Gordon, this was great. Now, we're off next weekend, of course, but the weekend after, what's the clue?
Well, of course, we're going to have sort of a retrospective, I think, of 2020. It will be remembered a very long time as a terrible year in which many people died, but it was also terrible for deaths of another kind that I suspect historians in the future will look back on with sadness. So in our next episode, we're going to talk about those deaths and the continuing life of a few very important survivors.
Gordon, thank you for this, and we'll see you in 2021.
Indeed we will.
Take
Happy
care.
Holidays.
You too, take care.
Good. Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba.